Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Welcome to the Relax Back UK show. For the first topic, my guests are Dr. Philippa Kay and Harriet Shearsmith, mum and influencer.
We know very clearly from the data that these vaccines are very effective and are very safe. We've been using most of them for years and years and years. They are used round the world in millions of children, preventing childhood illness and death.
The topic is vaccination and childhood vaccination in particular. Then a subject that affects millions and makes their life miserable is migraine headache. And I talked to Dr. Peter Chadder about a relatively unknown treatment.
High doses of riboflavin basically flush the cell with so much riboflavin that it then produces energy, because it's thought one of the reasons that you get migraines is there are constraints or bottlenecks on the energy production.
Before we start with that, though, I would like to let you know that on November the 1st, I have a book coming out. It is based on the experts that I've spoken to on the Relax Back UK show over the years. It gives the expertise and wisdom of many of my guests via the answers that they've given on the show, and also encourages you to ask questions about your own health. It's called Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. So please do check it out. You can find it on Amazon and Kindle. But right now, please do stay tuned for today's show. Thank you.
This show is cool.
So we are now well and truly into the new school year. Kids are mixing with each other and, of course, passing on various illnesses. We're now getting into the flu season, coughs and colds, all that. So what does all that really mean for us?
So we all sort of breathe a sigh of relief after summer. Oh, thank goodness for that. Now I've got a couple of hours in the middle of the day to myself where I can get on with some work or whatever I want to do. But sometimes they bounce back because they go to school and get ill. That's what everyone says. But is that really a problem? Is it really a difficulty for parents? What about the bosses that employ parents? Is it worse for them? Does anyone worry about them? And is it really a problem, or do we just moan about it a lot?
I think it definitely is an issue, actually, not just in terms of the children, the families of those children, the bosses of the families of those children, but also the wider impact on the NHS as well. And, you know, as you head into a winter. Now, every autumn and winter, coughs and colds are going to come up. Yes, they are. And the truth is that you can't avoid all of them, but that there are some childhood common infections which can be avoided through vaccination. And that's what we are talking about today. The World Health Organization recommends that we have vaccination targets of 95% of the population in order to prevent spread of disease. And we have not met that since 2020. And data released just this morning shows that vaccination coverage has decreased in 2023 to 2024 in all of the 14 vaccine areas.
Okay. Well, we will go. I want to talk to you about statistics and all that kind of stuff in a moment. Perhaps just now, it might be better to summarise some of the diseases that were and the infections we're talking about here. Things like, you know, measles, whooping cough. There's a great long list of them. You know, sort of jump in with some of the others.
So whooping cough, tetanus, diphtheria, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, various forms of meningitis, various forms of pneumococcal bacteria that can cause pneumonia and meningitis, something called rotavirus, which causes gastroenteritis in children.
Rotavirus, I've not heard of that one, no.
And the list goes on. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I should probably say, things like diphtheria and polio are virtually unheard of in the UK now, as opposed to 50, 60, 70 years ago, when actually most people would have heard of somebody who had calipers on their legs or an impact of polio in some way. And I guess that it sort of feels like we've forgotten to be afraid of these illnesses. And yet as a doctor, I am afraid of these illnesses.
And there's a great long list there of things you really don't want to get. I mean, these things, you know, it's not a case of feeling a bit crummy for an afternoon or a day and a little bit of time off school. This is serious stuff, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so measles is called the miserable measles. Children are miserable and unwell with it, but actually it can cause deafness. It can cause brain issues, infections of the lining of the brain and of the brain itself. It can cause long-term health issues, and it can cause death. And that's the bottom line, that these conditions are very serious. Mumps can cause the infection, obviously, where people look a bit like chipmunks and with a very swollen face, fever, being very miserable and unwell. But it might also lead to mumps meningitis, which can be fatal. And if you catch that after puberty, it can lead to infertility. So it's not just about the illness itself, but its knock-on effects. And these are very serious conditions that can be prevented with two doses of the MMR vaccine. It is 97% effective against measles and 88% effective against mumps. Now, no vaccine is perfect, but the more of us who are vaccinated essentially means that the front door is closed to the virus and so many people that it won't spread.
Yeah. One of my questions actually was going to be, how effective are these vaccines? Now, you mentioned that for a couple of the diseases, those percentages are pretty high. Are they more or less the same for the other things we mentioned, the other diseases we mentioned? You know, are some vaccinations better than others?
As always, some will be better than others. But in general, we know very clearly from the data that these vaccines are very effective and are very safe. We've been using most of them for years and years and years. They are used round the world in millions of children, preventing childhood illness and death. And actually, though, if we go back to sort of the UK, there's been a study recently, a poll of 2,000 parents. And unsurprisingly, almost 3 out of 5, 57% of them said that the biggest stress in their family's life was their children being unwell. And there's an impact on the rest of the family, right? You suddenly have to juggle all the responsibilities that you have, plus the other children that you have, plus going to work with an unwell child. Prevention is better than cure. It is a trite saying that's said all the time, but it's said all the time because it's true.
Yeah. Okay, now this might not be the best place to ask this question, so I might have to get a potted answer, but just humour me a little bit, if you wouldn't mind. Can you kind of summarise just how they work? Because they're not all different, are they? There's the general theory is the same for all of them, is it?
So the way that a vaccine works is that it's trying to train your immune system to recognize something that it might be exposed to in the wild. And so
the wild, I like that, the wild of school.
Yes, the world of suburbia. Yeah. But so that might be that we use a part of a protein that is found in that virus or bacteria. It might be that you get the dead vaccine, the dead virus or bacteria. It might be that you get, depending on which one, so the MMR is a live attenuated vaccine. That means it's been made weak so that you can't get sick from it. But what all of those things do is they train your immune system so that it recognizes that same protein or spike or virus in the future. And so that if it sees it, then the immune memory, because your immune system does have memory, will be able to send the cells and the antibodies straight there so that you don't become ill in the future. So people often say, oh, you know, my child needs to become unwell to train their immune system. Vaccines are the best way to train your immune system.
Okay, perfect. Now, when I'm old, so I did O levels, okay, not GCSEs. And I remember my biology teacher talking to me about herd immunity and him saying this phrase. And I'm amazed I remember this. He was a great teacher. He said, the thing about vaccines is the best thing for you is if everyone else has the vaccination and you don't. So there's sort of two things going on there. First of all, and you touched on it already, this herd immunity idea. You need to get percentages up to a certain amount for things to work properly. Can you kind of explain that a little bit in terms of the layman, that I might understand?
So no vaccine is perfect. No vaccine will say that 100% guaranteed that you won't get unwell if you're exposed to that virus. But also, not all children can have all vaccines. So it might be, for example, that you have a child who unfortunately is going through chemotherapy and is immunosuppressed, and they can't have a live vaccine for that reason. So not everybody is going to be able to have the vaccine. If you imagine that you live on a street with 100 houses on it, and the virus or the bacteria goes knocking on the front door of each of those houses. And once it's in the front door, it can spread to everyone in those houses, in that house, and then when that person goes out into the next house and the next house, right? What a vaccine does is that if we could vaccinate 95 out of those 100 houses, bearing in mind that not everybody can have it, that every time the virus knocks on the door is going to be closed because the immune system of that person will stop them being infected. That virus can't even get to house number 20 or house number 50 because it's going to die without a host. And that is why we want herd immunity, so that to protect the population of the street, but also to protect the population that for whatever reason, maybe they're allergic to one of the components of the vaccine, maybe they're too unwell to have it, maybe they're too young, bearing in mind that the vaccination program starts at 2 months old. And some vaccines we give to pregnant women in the hope that those antibodies will protect their babies, but that doesn't work for everything. So in order to protect the people who haven't had it yet or who can't have it, we need everybody else to have it. So I'm going to disagree with your biology teacher there. I want everybody who is eligible to have it to have them.
Yep, no, explained perfectly, thank you. Right, well, let's move on. Not everybody is so happy with the idea of getting a vaccination, are we just all a bit too busy? You know, we got to take our kids to the doctor. Why are we dipping below this herd immunity? Maybe it's a good idea to bring Harriet in here.
Hello, hi.
Hi, sorry, I wasn't meaning to ignore you so far. What's going on? How come we're not vaccinating our children so much? Is it because we're not so worried about some of these diseases now? Because, you know, as Philip has said, we've been pretty successful in getting rid of them to a large extent, so we don't see them and we're not scared anymore, or something else. What's going on?
I think there are a lot of factors, and I do think that, as Dr. Philip has said earlier, we've almost forgotten to be afraid of these diseases and these illnesses that come up because we don't see them anymore. And my parents grew up in the 50s, and both of them knew of people who'd had these experiences. All of their friends knew of people who'd picked up these illnesses because it was very commonplace. And we've got to a point now, thanks to the vaccination program, where we don't have that same level of visibility for these illnesses, and that's great, but it does mean that we've learned not to be afraid. And I think with the rise of social media as well, there is a lot of anti-vax rhetoric that's spread.
Well, the anti-vax rhetoric is something certainly I want to come on to in a moment, but just going back to some of the issues with having a vaccination, all medical interventions have some risk associated with them. You know, if you take an aspirin, there's some risk, although it is tiny, tiny, tiny. Do vaccinations carry any risk, the sort of vaccinations we've been talking about?
I'll take that one. Sure. Just from the medical standpoint, it's really important for everybody listening. There is a lot of mistrust around, often since the pandemic, but also related to social media and various other things. We have been using these vaccines for years. We have vaccinated millions of children around the world. Everything in life has a risk. You know, every time you take a foot outside your front door, there are risks in your house, but you know, every time you cross the road, you take a risk and you make an informed decision about that risk. The risks when it comes to vaccines are about side effects, and side effects of having a sore arm, or it might give your kid a temperature. They might be a bit grizzly for a few days. And every person...
I had that when I had my COVID vaccination. Right. You know, I'm not a kid, and I was a bit grizzly. My wife will tell you for a day or two.
And we have to balance that against the risk of meningitis, or against the risk of encephalitis, or against the risk of dying. And actually, when you put those risks and benefits on the balance scale, the vast, vast, huge body of evidence is that it comes down really firmly towards the side of benefit.
You're preaching to the converted here. Now, I am on board. You know, if I'm offered a vaccination, I roll my sleeve up and I take it, because I understand that it's it's been done for my own good. That these people, they're not having a laugh. They're not being evil. They're trying to help me. But there are lots of people that believe otherwise. So is the real difficulty, I guess, one of communication? You know, why don't people vaccinate their children? I mean, until recently, there was someone pretty much standing, running to be president of the USA based on an anti-vax ticket. I mean, it just seems it's gone crazy. I don't understand it. Harriet, can you help me to understand how people can be influenced this way?
I mean, also preaching to the converted, because all of my children have been vaccinated and I have been vaccinated. I think the evidence speaks for itself. As Dr. Philippa said, again, there is a lot of misinformation shared out there, and it is difficult when misinformation is shared to get the facts across. But the facts do remain that vaccines work. And again, to touch on what Dr. Philippa said before, there are risks in everything. So having those vaccinations is worth the risk. And what I've noticed a lot online is that there with everything online, there is a real polarization. But what we need to be doing is reaching the parents who are perhaps on the fence, who are perhaps wondering if this is a higher risk than it actually is, and giving them the education so that they can make the right choice for their children. Because not everybody can be vaccinated. We talked about that earlier, and that is a fact. But we also need to protect those people, and those children in particular, who can't be vaccinated and who are in a school setting where we know those bugs are rife. You know, we only have to look at what kids are doing. I know my daughter will be, rubbing her nose and all sorts at school today and passing things around. It's what kids do. So in order to keep those bugs at bay, we need to be educating parents properly and getting those kids vaccinated.
Is part of that getting some statistics out there? Because if you Google stats for people that have been harmed by the COVID vaccine, you will get loads of stuff. A lot of it is, non-scientific and people written by people that may have a different agenda that is goodness knows what. But you can find statistics about the number of people that potentially might have been hurt by a COVID vaccine. But you can't find the statistics, or it can be difficult. One of you can tell me statistics for how many people the COVID vaccine saved.
I think, isn't there a phrase that 95% of statistics are made up on the spot?
Including that one, probably, yeah.
Well, exactly. I think that's my point. I think there is a lot of science out there, and not all that science is good science. And I can cherry pick data to make it say any story that I want. And as somebody that writes in the national press, and I am aware often that the headline says one thing and the body of the article says another. And still, before I go on television in the morning, I go and I find the original paper and I read the original paper, the original scientific paper, because the devil is in the detail, actually. And are we comparing like with like, and what group of people were involved, et cetera, et cetera. We know very clearly that hundreds of thousands and millions of people were saved by the COVID vaccine. And there is a proportion of people that that disagree with that. Okay, I am an evidence-based doctor, and I will go where the evidence is and what the evidence supports. When it comes to childhood vaccinations, we know that the childhood vaccination program prevents around 5,000 deaths and over 100,000 hospital admissions every year in England. That is a significant number. Every one of those can be saved. And that is what I would say to somebody who is anti-vax. And actually, there is an argument which has been used, which is that if you imagine that you are standing at one edge of a field and you have to cross the field to get to the other side, you know, where your child will be safe, and condition I've got, measles, mumps, rubella, is a tiger standing in the middle of the field. And people say, but the woods around the edge, you know, they're going to be filled with risk. And that's the vaccine. It might be filled with risk and that you might fall over a log and you might fall over whatever. And I'm yelling, there's a tiger. There's a tiger in the middle of the field. There's a tiger in the middle of the field. We need to be scared of the tiger. And so take your vaccine instead. Statistics. And actually, we know very clearly from the World Health Organization all around the world that vaccines save lives. And in every sort of refugee situation, in every war situation, you will hear stories pretty quickly about things like polio and diphtheria coming back up, and how Médecins Sans Frontières or whoever else the UN is going in to vaccinate the children to stop the spread. Vaccines save lives.
Yeah. And actually, that has just been happening in Palestine, on the Gaza Strip, in the last couple of weeks, I think. So that, you know, that is very topical. That's been noticed, and people have been going in to give vaccines in that situation. So, yeah, absolutely. The key thing is statistics, isn't it? Because people do not understand statistics. I am always being fooled by statistics, and I sometimes think about this stuff. So I think, Harriet, have you ever been duped by statistics or this kind of stuff?
I'm sure there will have been occasions when I've been duped by statistics. But as Dr. Philippa said, and I know I keep referring back to her, but she is the one with the medical experience. I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's, as a parent, I'm looking for the person with the medical experience. I'm looking for the person with the information that's evidence-based, that's tried and tested, who can give me those answers. And what the medical professionals are saying to me, statistics or no, is that I need to vaccinate my children. And that's where my confidence lies, is with those medical professionals who've got the training, who've looked at the statistics, who are not necessarily going to be duped by the statistics because they've got them there. They have the experience and they have the training to tell me as a parent what I need to do to keep my children safe.
Good. Okay, I've got one plan or one idea that might help you, or plan in general. See what you think. There are a few old people, and actually I've come across one. It's a guy in his 80s, and he's got a bit of a limp. He's had a limp all his life, most of his life. The reason for that is he got polio as a child. If you ask him, do you think it's worth having the vaccination? You might be told very quickly, in no uncertain terms, there might be some swearing involved in his answer as well. But he will tell you what he thinks, and I think that is potentially a good way to go. Ask people like that.
Absolutely. I think that we have forgotten to be afraid because vaccination has been so effective that we have virtually wiped out conditions such as polio. And yet 70 years ago, everybody knew somebody who was in calipers, and everybody was deathly afraid of the iron lung. And so we've
Which
almost...
Which was a horrible thing, actually. People probably don't even really know what it is now.
Absolutely. When I was a medical student in London, I had the opportunity to go into an iron lung for just 5 minutes. And the thought of spending years or decades in there is absolutely terrifying. We have been a victim of our own success in that way. And I guess in some ways learnt to we've stopped being afraid. But as I said, as a doctor, I am very afraid of these conditions that are entirely preventable. And therefore, with that prevention not only keeps your child safe, but it keeps you from having that stress and strain of an unwell child and all the knock-on effects of that. Plus, it helps protect the NHS as well as we head into winter. Now, for anybody out there who's after more information...
That was going to be my next question. Good. Well done. Thank you.
So, the NHS website is absolutely jam-packed with information, www.nhs.uk/childhood vaccinations. And if you aren't sure about what your child has, and actually that might be a reason for parents who think, well, I didn't know they were supposed to have a booster, or I'm not exactly sure what they're supposed to have or what they have had, then your GP surgery will have a record. Everything is kept on record. And so if you aren't sure, then contact your GP surgery and say, is my child up to date? And if they're not, you'll be able to book in. And finally, for everybody who says, well, you know, I don't want to take my child out of school, I might get into trouble, medical appointments would be an authorised absence, we of course will try and work around you. Your GP surgery is open way after 3:30 when the primary school's shut. We will do everything that we can in order to make it easy for you to vaccinate your child.
Excellent. That is a perfect note to finish on. So Harriet and Dr. Philippa, thank you very much indeed for chatting about this vitally important topic. So many thanks.
Thanks for having us.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Peter Chadder is the Chief Scientific Officer at Bespoke Biotics, and they specialise in helping people that suffer from migraine headaches. So my first question to him was, do we really know how many people in the UK, or for that matter worldwide, suffer from migraines?
To be honest, the figures seem to vary, because I think nearly everyone has a headache and then they're not quite sure if it's a migraine or not. But migraine is actually a condition that can affect up to 1 in 6 people. So we talk about millions of people, millions and millions of people. Wow. And when we say migraines, there must be at least, you know, a couple of years of debilitating headaches, which are more than just tension headaches. They're things that actually kind of stop you from working. You know, they tend to affect one side of the head. They tend to just stop you from doing your everyday activities, whereas normal headaches, you kind of get by. But yeah, these are much more significant headaches.
And there are a few specific symptoms, aren't there, associated with migraines? It's not the same for everyone, but can you kind of name a few of these things that you might experience?
Some people will feel nauseous. Some people will get pains in certain parts of the head. Certain people will not be able to see properly. They'll have colours coming up in their vision. They'll hear sounds. Basically, if you think about your nervous system and your brain, you know, you've got all these inputs and outputs going on. And if you can mess up any of those, so your vision, for example, then that's a kind of one of the symptoms of a migraine. But there must be about 40 different categories of migraine, and almost verging, you know, we're on a sort of spectrum where things like even epilepsy, sort of some versions of it are almost the beginning of migraine. So that it's a very kind of a wide family of conditions, but normally, you know, we classify them all as migraine, but it's more than just a tension headache, which you might get sort of, you know, you get a headache of pain across the front of you, typically, or at your temples. This tends to be a less balanced and more debilitating kind of headache. And sometimes it lasts for days and days, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing's sure is that if you're a migraine sufferer, it can really kind of ruin your life. This is not a small thing.
No, it's not. And some people are literally debilitated almost for life, even though they're good people, they want to work, they want to do things, but they literally are sort of confined to almost their bed because more days than not, they're suffering with symptoms. And also it's something, by the way, that can come on at a certain point in life. So, for example, you know, a young person might not face migraines, but as soon as they reach a sort of age, or in women, when it comes to the menopause or any of these other hormonal changes or aging issues, suddenly people can find themselves with migraines. But these days, migraines are very common in young people as well.
Goodness. So they're getting more common in young people than they have been previously? That's interesting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't think I've got actual evidence of that. Anecdotally, 100% I can say that that's true, because if you speak to doctors...
We don't like anecdotal evidence on this show, Peter.
Yeah, I'm not I'm not sure that we've got figures from the past, but this is why when you say how many people, well, it used to be like 1 in 7, 1 in 8, and now it's sort of getting down to 1 in 6 people, I think. It's a huge number.
So currently, what is the usual treatment? You know, if you go to your GP suffering with a migraine, what's he likely to do for you?
Well, you know, the first thing is they'll tell you diet, exercise, healthy lifestyle, and then but normal painkillers. If those painkillers don't work, then there are numerous treatments that you can be progressed along a path.
And is it quite common that the regular painkillers don't work? And you know, what's the chance of a change in lifestyle working as well?
Yes, it's pretty common that they don't work. To be honest, most people wouldn't go to their GP for just an average kind of migraine. I think it's only when it starts to get problematic then people really want to do something. And then the GP has various treatments. The one that's been sort of prevalent is something called triptans. But you see, with all of these treatments, there are always side effects. And the latest one are called pants, G-pants. I know it sounds funny, but Atogepant is one of the brand names. But all of these things...
Who came up with that? Their marketing team needs a bit of a chatting too, I suggest.
I think it's derived from the chemical you know, aspect of it. But I forget the reasons. But Atogepant was just... made available on the NICE formulary, just so the NHS can now prescribe it. But unfortunately, it's a great expense to the NHS. So it's what you call a level 4 treatment, because it's about £500 a month to the NHS to put you on that treatment. So it's really, you've got to be so dire, you've been through everything else before you get onto that one. But people seem to forget that since 2012, NICE and the NHS have been recommending that you could take just a vitamin to do that.
So okay. That's where my
interest has been sparked, because I did a PhD in the blood-brain barrier many years ago, and I've got people suffering with migraine in my family. So I was looking for cures, and that's basically how we've ended up here, that I became the scientific office for Bespoke Biotics and Migrasoothe, which is our product.
Okay, so tell us a bit more about... the vitamin. You say it's a vitamin that can help. What vitamin is it?
So it's actually a vitamin that almost everyone's heard of, vitamin B2. So riboflavin is the name of vitamin B2. That's the proper name. And
everyone knows that reading the back of their cornflakes packets in the morning when they're a kid, isn't it?
Yeah. Correct. Because without riboflavin, we can't exist. It's what all in our cells, we've got something called mitochondria, the sort of Duracells of a cell. And riboflavin is one of the key sort of nutritional elements that helps those mitochondria convert the inputs into energy in our body. So basically, what they have found, and this is 100% scientifically proven with lots of research, if you can give high doses of riboflavin, basically flush the cell with so much riboflavin that it then produces energy, because it's thought one of the reasons that you get migraines is there are constraints or bottlenecks on the energy production. So suddenly we get all these mitochondria working at full speed. They're bathed in this energizing stuff, and then, wow, your migraines get better. But it is a process where you have to have a very high dose. So any of your high street sort of vitamins will not work. High street vitamins contain about 0.7 milligrams of riboflavin, but the formulas that treat migraine are 400 milligrams.
Okay, let me interrupt you there just for a moment. As I said earlier on the show, we don't like anecdotal evidence. So I thought before I spoke to you, I thought, right, let's have a little Google around. And I actually looked at the NHS website under migraines. Now, I don't think vitamin B2 is mentioned on the NHS website under migraines. I couldn't find it.
If you look, there's something called the NICE practice, NICE guidelines. And there's one called CG150, which is sent to doctors, although most doctors don't know about it. CG150 lists that that vitamin B2 can work for migraine in high dose, 400 milligrams and above.
Okay, so that's official, official from the NHS.
And actually, your neurologist, if you get sent to see a consultant, all of consultants will say you can try this to people before they take them on higher doses of conventional medicine. Because unlike conventional medicine, having higher doses of vitamin will improve your skin, help your eyesight, and hopefully help your migraines in a lot of cases.
Okay. Are there any downsides to gobbling tons of vitamin B2? Any harm?
Yes, there is one. Your urine will go luminous yellow. And that's the only thing. And the reason why your urine goes luminous yellow is riboflavin is a coloured substance, is yellow. And any excess that you've got in your body gets just washed away. And that's actually why you have to have a dose every day. You can't have one dose a week, for instance. That won't work. You have to have it on a daily basis, and you have to have it for a few months.
Okay, so this is a prophylactic. You don't have some when you've got the migraine. You have it all the time.
Correct. Well, once a day, and with in the morning, it's fine. And people also report many other benefits. You see, a lot of, particularly women, suffer with chapped lips and other things. And suddenly that all disappears. There's an improvement in your eyesight. And, you know, there's a lot of other benefits, because if you're giving energy to your brain cells, your neurons, you're also giving it to the rest of your body. And so there are lots of other benefits of giving these high doses. And unfortunately, the way our modern food is, we need things like this to actually get the kind of benefits that we need. I mean, I won't go into food in this because it's a huge topic. But we have a lot of processed food, and we live a very different life to our ancestors. And this is why
I've done a couple of shows on UPF. That is that's another whole topic. I might invite you back maybe, Peter, because I'm always looking for interesting people to chat about that.
I love that topic. I can go
back to the vitamin B2.
Yeah.
Is this available on prescription with the NHS?
Unfortunately not. It's called this sort of thing is called off-label use, and you can buy it for pennies a day. So when I told you a Toji pant costs like 20 quid a day or 30 quid a day, so it's hundreds of pounds a month, this thing is pennies a month. So we sell, I think our large bottle, it must be about 40 pence a month for one of these capsules. And as I said, you couldn't get that from eating, you know, you'd have to eat 1,500 eggs to get the same amount of riboflavin. So sure. It's just not anything you could get conventionally. And the evidence, by the way, is not just in the UK, it's in the US, it's in Germany, it's in Australia. Loads of countries have actually recommended this as a therapy. We sometimes, if you want maximum effectiveness, we combine it with magnesium, which is another treatment used at night. And in the day, we also, coenzyme Q10. And we have certain formulas which also include things like feverfew and ginger and other vitamin Bs, so they're the sort of higher versions of the formulation, and they give you kind of a more rounded effect. So you can start off with the basic or have something a bit more.
Okay. You touched on it a little bit earlier in the discussion. This is a very difficult question, or probably impossible, so I apologise for asking it first of all. You've got a couple of minutes left. Can you give me an idea of the mechanisms involved? How does it actually work? You know, what's it doing to me when I take this stuff?
Basically, I mean, it's basically, you've got to remember that this is, your body would normally digest food, and one of the components of that food is riboflavin. And as I said, it is affecting the energy pathways in the cells. So, for whatever, now let's say ultra processed foods, we don't get the actual content that we should have. This concentrated level going straight. Now, don't forget, any substance you take, a lot of it gets wasted in the digestive system. But because this is pure, it's getting through into your bloodstream, it's going into the cells. And as I said, if your cells, every cell has got thousands of these things called mitochondria, each one of them is a little energy pack, releasing energy into the body. So suddenly your cells are bathed in this riboflavin availability, which normally is more restricted. And then because you've got energy production, the likelihood of you ending up in, if you, you know, in a migraine type situation, and even things like, you know, other neurological conditions, as I said, sometimes people report that they find benefits, suddenly that the cells are working on full steam. So if they were working on, you know, 40%, suddenly they've got now 70-80% of what they need to be, if they're not 100%, and then your symptoms get relieved. And as I said, the effects are not just for your brain cells, although that's why we're talking about, because migraine is debilitating, but, you know, even simple things like chapped lips, even things like, you know, your eyesight feeling a bit down, this will bring it all up, because it's,
I'm not going to age quicker, am I? With all this extra energy, I'm not going to suddenly lift to 40 instead of 80.
No, you're only restoring what you should have had in the first place, if you think about it. And the reason why we haven't got it is because of all the foods and all the toxins that we're taking in, which is restricting the amount of these sort of things that are available. And don't forget, a lot of supplements that we sell, right? We do not have NHS guidance and papers on it. This is one where we do. So there's a lot of work that the NHS wouldn't, or the NICE would not put something down like that. And the reason why we give, by the way, coenzyme Q10, it's also similar. These are all things that are working on the energy mechanisms. And so is magnesium, because a lot of us are chronically deprived of magnesium. So when we have magnesium, it's involved in almost 300 reactions in the body, 300 mechanisms. So basically, can you understand, we're trying to give the body all the chances it needs to get its functionally optimal. And by the way, I don't suffer with migraines, but I take it. Not every day, but I take it a lot of days whenever I feel I need a little boost, because it just makes sure that my memory and my brightness is all there.
Practice what you preach, Peter.
Exactly. I honestly believe it. That's what I do.
All right. Now, I know listeners are going to find this interesting and potentially useful. Final question. If they want to know more, can you give a good source for useful, well-balanced information, further information?
Yeah, so as I said, they can get the information from NICE for the guidelines. And if they want, there are links on our website, and we talk about all this in a lot more depth. We talk about the reasons why you might have a migraine, and also alternative therapies like, you know, exercise and water and things like that. And they're all available at migrasoothe.co.uk. That's M-I-G-R-A, soothe, S-O-O-T-H-E.co.uk. And we must have a good, you know, hundreds of articles there where there's lots of information where people can find. And if they read the FAQs, you know, they can learn about, you know, all the benefits of taking such a supplement. And, you know, I do this not because, you know, I'm out to make money. I do this because I've gone through a lot of family upheaval and I've started off in science, and this is my passion. You know, this is why I'm involved in this business. It's a total passion for me. And I tell you, whenever we have a stock position where people can't get our products or things like that, people really start to, they really want this stuff because it's working for them. The only thing I would say that some people do find problems with this kind of stuff, and that's because if you start and you find that there are any sort of things that you're not happy with, just reduce the dosage and then gradually increase it. But you must, if you really want to reduce your migraines, you have to go the NHS guidance is also 3 months minimum, because you really want, it doesn't work like straight away. Many people report it does, by the way, but a lot of people do not find that benefit. So that's why the NHS guidance is 3 months. We tell everyone, take your time, take 3 months. If you're finding any sort of issues in the day, first day or two, instead of having the dose daily, have it every 2 days or 3 days, and then gradually increase it till you can get one a day. Because, you know, everyone's different, basically. Everybody's different. DNA is different.
Good. All right. Peter, thank you very much for chatting. I think this has potential to help a lot of people, because a lot of people do suffer from migraines. So many thanks for chatting.
Lovely, lovely to speak to you, Mike.
The station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show, and they were Dr. Philippa Kay, GP, author and mother, Harriet Shearsmith, mum and influencer, and Peter Chadder talking about migraines, and he is the Chief Scientific Officer at Bespoke Biotics. And of course, a big thank you to you for joining me and listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.